Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It is Friday, June 19th, 2020. Every week we check in with Publishers Weekly for the latest news on books and publishing. And once again, Andrew Albany's BW senior writer joins me from his home office in New York City. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So it turns out, Andrew, if anybody thought it had happened, it hasn't. The virus hasn't gone away. That's the clear message this week in the number of states where COVID-19 cases are surging. The virus continues to affect the book business, too. In your reporting since March, you've been marveling at how the numbers for book sales have stayed pretty steady through the crisis. Yet you've been waiting for the other shoe to drop. And wow, did it ever drop in April?
Yeah, you know, we've always said at some point when we've talked about this on the show that the numbers would have to show some of the ill effects of the stay-at-home orders on bookstores at some point. And yeah, we're starting to see some real evidence of that now. Bookstore sales took an unprecedented plunge in April, tumbling 65.3% compared to April of 2019. This, according to the preliminary estimates released by the U.S. Census Bureau. In total, April bookstore sales fell a total of $412 million off the pace from 2019, down to an anemic $219 million a month in sales. And this comes on the heels of some fairly weak March bookstore sales too, down 33% compared to a year ago. March sales were just under $400 million. I think 392 was the number. Now, the good news is, April is expected to be the worst month for bricks and mortar stores, as many outlets were closed because of the stay-at-home orders. And, you know, more good news is that the weekly print numbers from NPD BookScan were actually up slightly. So the sales for the week that ended June 6th, that's the most recent week we have numbers for, were actually 1.6% higher than the previous week. So on that score, steady as she goes. But as you also point out, the reopenings in many of the states are showing some rather ominous signs. It appears like that, you know, we are not over the hump when it comes to COVID-19. And indeed, some states are starting to see some really worrisome spikes. And here's something that worries me too. Now that we're in the latter stages of reopening in many states and the numbers are going up, a lot of these bookstores are no longer going to qualify for assistance. Because we're reopened, right? So you don't get rent relief if your store's supposed to be open. Yet at the same time, a lot of customers, the majority of customers, I would imagine, are still just not going to be comfortable going out and browsing in a bookstore. It's not going to be just, hey, back to normal here, especially not with the numbers doing what they're doing now. So I think that's something for us to watch as the months go on, is how bookstores are going to fare as the year plays out. And more people decide that they're fine staying home, staying safe, and ordering books online, avoiding contact with other humans, which, of course, is a key selling point for indie bookstores, right? And libraries, as we talked about last week, is that they bring people together around books. Well, I imagine we're going to see a lot more people just getting their books delivered.
And one big book, of course, can do a lot to boost sales. And one such book is under a cloud this week. Former National Security Advisor John Bolton is being sued by the Trump administration over his memoir, The Room Where It Happened, which is set to get its pub date next week. The two sides are headed to court as we speak. And what do you think? Is The Room Where It Happened going to happen?
Yes, it is going to happen. I'm certain of that. In fact, it has happened. You need only turn on the TV or read your local paper or any national media to see that this book is out there. As our readers no doubt know by now, the book is definitely in reviewers' hands and all over the press. And we're already hearing all kinds of bombshell reports from the pages of the book. Nevertheless, as you know, the Department of Justice on Tuesday of this week filed a civil suit in Washington, D.C. over Bolton's forthcoming memoir, with the book's June 23rd official publication date now just days away. Now, what was curious to me about that suit, and to many other observers, I should point out, is that the government on Tuesday basically filed a breach of contract case. In Tuesday's filings, the DOJ said it was seeking an order that would direct Bolton to take all actions within his power to stop the publication of the book, and also to place a constructive trust on any profits obtained from the book that was published before the government had completed its review and authorized the book's release. So in a nutshell, the DOJ is really seeking to grab Bolton's profits from the book, but not really seeking to stop the book, because what does it really mean to order Bolton to do everything in his power to stop publication, right? It's possible that Bolton could go to his publisher, Simon & Schuster, and say, hey, it'd be best if we waited a couple of weeks so I could maybe keep my royalties. but that's not going to happen. The book is printed. It's in warehouse. It's been sent out to reviewers. It's all over the press. This is the moment for the book. I'm almost certain that it's going to go ahead. And of course, Bolton has sat for interviews too. So the media wave has begun. It's time for the book to get out there. Unless, of course, you know, the government is, you know, urging Bolton to crash Simon & Schuster's servers or set fire to the publisher's warehouses, which I don't think they are. I don't think there's any way to stop publication at this point, which brings us to sort of part two of this, which is on Wednesday, the DOJ decided that, in fact, it was going to try to stop the book. You know, when I first saw the complaint on Tuesday, it seemed utterly inconsistent to me that the DOJ would argue that, hey, there's national security issues here, but we're not going to block the book. We're just going to take the money. Well, on Wednesday, they came back with part two of this. They are going to try to block the book. They even ordered Simon & Schuster, they sought in the order, the temporary restraining order, to get Simon & Schuster to try to claw back and destroy the books that it has already printed and shipped. Well, of course, that is certainly not going to happen. And in a statement last Wednesday, which you can read on the PW site, Simon & Schuster did indeed tell the DOJ to go pound sand.
It's certainly an extraordinary step for a court to take, Andrew, to block a publication as a matter of prior restraint, which is just legalese for censorship. Certainly, it seems like a long shot in this particular case. So what next then for Bolton and his book?
Well, lots of sales. You know, let's be clear what this really is at the end of the day. This is great publicity. You couldn't pay for this kind of publicity. And it's a huge embarrassment for the administration at the same time, and for the Justice Department, I might add. You know, it's, you know, I'm not sure that those institutions are even fazed by this kind of stuff anymore. But we also learned this week that Attorney General William Barr's Justice Department is mulling criminal charges against Bolton, too. That would really amp up the publicity here. And I think would be even more idiotic than filing a civil suit, because it's just more publicity during the election process. If a criminal case was to play out here, that would literally put the government's publication review process on trial, specifically Trump's use of the review process on trial.
And that's really what this case is about, right? The government's manuscript review process. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I think that's exactly right. The facts of this case are not really in doubt. They're detailed in the court filings, and they really do boil down to what's required by the government's publication review process. Now, according to this is all laid out in the government's case as well. These are not in dispute. Bolton submitted his manuscript to the NSC, the National Security Council, for review on December 30th of 2019. About 3 weeks later, on January 23rd, the NSC's representative, who's Ellen Knight, informed Bolton that based on a preliminary review, there was classified information in the book and it couldn't be published or otherwise disclosed without revisions. So the lawsuit makes clear there was a detailed back and forth. There were revisions. There were multiple conversations. And in April, towards the end of April, there's a point when the NSC told Bolton that he was clean, that the book no longer contained classified information. However, rather than issue a written release, the book then leveled up to the White House, where Michael Ellis, who's the NSC Senior Director for Intelligence, took the issue up. And here's where it gets interesting, because the suit notes that Bolton, in early May, wrote to the NSC and said, "Hey, you said I'm clean. Where's my written authorization? We want to get going here." And the response that came back was basically, "We got nothing for you. Don't call us. We'll call you." Well, that appears to have been the last straw for Bolton and his publisher, who just decided to move ahead. You know, for months now, Bolton and his publisher and his lawyers have been expressing concern that the Trump administration might use the governmental review process to try to squash the book. They had the NSC on record saying the book was cleared at one point. So what the heck, they thought? They're just going to move ahead with publication. They printed the books, shipped them, set a pub date of June 23rd. And that's why we are where we are today, with the DOJ pursuing this clearly panicked legal action. And I just have to point out here, from a personal point of view, how stupid this whole strategy really is for the White House. I mean, to me, it really reflects that something is seriously wrong at the top levels of our government, because this is the First Amendment and clearly protected speech we're talking about. And this case has zero chance of actually squashing this book. Now, did John Bolton break his non-disclosure agreements? Is he maybe on the hook for something here? Certainly. There's a possibility there that this suit might cost John Bolton personally. But, you know, this lawsuit is doing nothing more at this point than giving the book a major publicity boost.
But the claims that publication will hurt national security, do you think they may hold weight with the court?
you know, that's a great point, because national security is one of, I think, three things that can be used to, that has been used to sort of justify prior restraint. But the courts have created a really super high standard for what constitutes a threat to national security. And lawyers who've looked at this say there's just simply no way this book meets that standard. But again, going back to why I think this is stupid, this book could have been out in March. The NSC had initially cleared it, you know, and believe me, it might have been a bad week for Trump when this came out, if it had come out early in the spring. But at this point, do Trump supporters really care about any of this stuff? Can anyone say anything that's going to win the trust of a Trump supporter? I'm not sure that that's true. So, you know, here's why I think it was so stupid, because just discredit John Bolton. That's what Trump loves to do, right? It might have been a bad day, but tweet at him, you know, call him a liar. Go on. Like he, Trump this week went on Sean Hannity and said nobody at the White House liked John Bolton. Well, why isn't that not like the strategy that Trump has been pursuing since early March with this? John Bolton is universally disliked. The left and the right hate him equally. So, and from the early reviews, this book sounds like it's vintage Bolton, and it's going to anger everyone. So, you know, you're telling me that Trump can't discredit John Bolton with his base, because the left sure is not going to welcome John Bolton like he's a hero. In fact, the people who I know who are following this case are rooting for both sides. They want the book to come out, and they hope that John Bolton gets enjoined and doesn't get to keep any of the profits. And understandably so, because rather than offer up this information during impeachment, Bolton, it appears, instead sought to hold this all back for a $2 million book deal. So does this book really pose a threat to Donald Trump? Well, it does now, because Trump has now built this book up into the book that Trump doesn't want you to read. He's created this media firestorm. He's perpetuating this media firestorm by pursuing legal actions. And now he's pushed this book into the election season. So we'll wait to hear what the court decides. But it's not going to really matter, is my guess. And in fact, it could end very badly if the judge decides that Trump's team was, in fact, suppressing the book after all through the review process. But let's be clear, John Bolton's book is not a threat to U.S. national security. This book is out there. It isn't coming back. Simon & Schuster didn't sign any non-disclosures. They have every right to move ahead with this. They're within their rights. The question now is how it's going to land in the court of public opinion. And that's what ultimately is going to matter here.
And we will close this week with a development in a different lawsuit, this one filed earlier this month by four publishers against the Internet Archive over its open library book scanning efforts. And last week, Andrew, you reported that the IAA was closing its controversial National Emergency Library 2 weeks earlier than it previously announced. That was at June 30th closing date. And when they were doing so, they cited the lawsuit. So what do you make of all of this?
You know, not much, really. You know, I don't think it really is going to make any difference in terms of this case, because the publishers, who are supported by the Association of American Publishers, they were suing over the archive's broader scanning program. So not the National Emergency Library, which in fact got very little usage according to the numbers. Really, the AAP and the publishers here are going after the concept of controlled digital lending, sort of this untested legal theory that the Internet Archive is using to scan and lend copies of books. Now, here's what is interesting. In his blog post announcing that he was going to close the National Emergency Library, Cal said he moved up the closure because of the suit, as you noted, but he also acknowledged what we've talked about on this show. He called the complaint by the publishers an attack on the very concept of a library, right? On the very concept of a library owning and lending digital books. And he also noted that he's already taken down the 127 books that were listed as infringing in the publisher's case. Now, I don't know how any of this is all going to play out in court. I will say this, that Cal's actions suggest to me he hasn't responded to the suit yet, but his actions so far suggest to me that he really wants to resolve this in the boardroom and not in the courtroom. You know, libraries want something that they are being denied here, right? The ability to own scans of their collections, which they've invested public dollars in. You know, the Internet Archive, the Open Library is simply not a pirate operation. If someone wants a pirated book, they can easily find that online. People who are inclined to seek pirated books are not going to sign up for an Open Library library card and borrow crappy scans of a book. You know, it's easy enough to find a pirated copy online. And, you know, the AAP and the Authors Guild, when they say things like that, that this is a pirate operation, and compare the IA to smashing the window of a bookstore, it just sounds ridiculous. At the same time, Brewster is, almost certainly taking some liberties with the Copyright Act, I'd wager. you know, again, here's the takeaway from this week's developments with the National Emergency Library. It seems to me the Internet Archive wants to sit down and have a talk, right? They want to accommodate rights holders, as their actions this week suggest. The question I have is whether the publishers and the AAP are interested in resolving this issue in a way that might benefit everyone, if they're willing to come to an agreement, or whether they just want to sue the IA out of existence, the book scanning operation out of existence, whether they're seeking a copyright victory that they could, you know, wave around and use in other capacities. So can these two sides sit in a room and work out a solution without it being in court? I don't know, but I am reasonably sure that the best way to get a real solution to this question, one that would benefit publishers, authors, libraries, and of course the public, would be in the boardroom and not the courtroom.
And for Friday, June 19th, 2020, that's a wrap on a look at this week's news in books and publishing. Thanks for joining me, Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming next on Beyond the Book, in the second half of The Never-Ending Story of Pirates, Global Strategies to Combat Counterfeiting, special content from Copyright Clearance Center explores in depth specific publisher experiences, illuminating how these organizations are responding to the ongoing challenge of piracy. Discussion leader McKeel Coleman describes the way forward.
To do what we're going to do, we need good data on the impact of piracy on our business, both in terms of the loss of sales, but also indirectly on our ability to reinvest and take risks on our new publishing projects. And finally, one way to take the wind out of the pirate sails is to provide alternative, legitimate access. In fact, one could almost argue that piracy screams opportunity and innovation.
More global strategies to combat counterfeiting next on Beyond the Book. Our show is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Our complete show archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.